Lorena here. We are getting ramped up for another episode of Book Banter. Tonight, I will be talking with Darby Bayham. She has been on Book Banter before, and I did some other events with her, and I love doing these events with her because we get to reconnect and talk about all things books and all other things. She's an author. She's a storyteller. She's on a mission to make women like herself feel seen and believe that love is possible for them. Darby began writing for the Washington Post in 2016, using all her doubts and hopes and fears to connect with 2.5 million subscribers. She then took all of that and started writing a fiction series, a romance series for Harlequin Books. This has been released in the US and overseas. This is the fifth book in her Friendship Chronicles series, which is just impressive in itself. But what's even more impressive is every single one of these books are amazing and I couldn't put them down. This book isn't quite out yet. It does not come out until November 25th. And then she also has another book coming out next June. So without further ado, I am going to welcome Darby to Book Banter. Hi.
Hi, Raina.
It's so good to be talking to you again.
Same. I always enjoy our, you know, our chats, our in-person conversations, all of the above.
Yeah. I'm so excited that, like, in the time that you've been writing these books, or these books have been coming out, virtual events are even a thing. And so we've been able to connect either in person or virtually over all of these books. And that's been great.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been great for me, especially. I didn't know, you know, when I got my deal with Harlequin, this was in 2020. So who knew what life was going to be like at that point? If we would ever have, sad to say, in-person events again, or if it would always be over Zoom or StreamYard or YouTube or whatever. But I'm thankful that we've been able to find a good balance of them both in 2024. So here we are.
And I'm of the mind to keep virtual events just as part of the book tour experience.
Yeah.
Because you just, like, there's so many people that you can reach with a virtual event online that you can't reach in person. You could have a extensive tour and still there's going to be people that couldn't make it or live in a really tiny town between the two towns, you know, that you're visiting. So I'm excited to be here with you still.
Absolutely. And I get to connect with folks like you. So it's great for me because I won't see you again in person until probably February. So it's like, okay, well, I get to see book friends and family in the meantime.
Exactly. Okay, so we're here to talk about Falling for the Competition. Yes, love it. Tell us what Falling for the Competition is all about.
Awesome. So as Raina mentioned, it is the fifth book in my Friendship Chronicles series with Harlequin. So, you know, it is a series that follows a group of these dynamic Black women, this friendship group, and each book follows a different friend, figuring out what makes her feel fulfilled, what, you know, love looks like in her life, navigating like the waters of career and friendship and family and love and all the things. So you can certainly start from the beginning and follow the friendship group through, but you can always start at any point. So if you've never read any of my books before, this is the perfect time to jump into Falling for the Competition. It follows two mid-30s folks who are going back to school to get their MBA for completely different reasons. They have completely different takes on what it means to be successful, but they both are extremely accomplished in their own right. And so, you know, they, as you can imagine, it pits them against each other. And from the moment they meet, they sort of very literally crash into each other. They are rivals from the very beginning. One, Keisha Edwards is, you know, and I say this, especially talking to Raina, is, you know, a New Orleans native. So love that. She's originally from New Orleans. And I like to say that she is a plus size beauty with thighs as thick as her New Orleans accent and the confidence to match. So that tells you a little bit about her. Julian is a Morehouse grad, a Rhodes Scholar, someone who's used to walking into the room and immediately commanding attention. And these two, you know, in the classroom and in life outside of the classroom, end up as rivals, sort of one-upping each other. There's a lot of witty banter, a lot of sparring. Julian is smitten with her from the beginning, but he's like, I always come out on top. So he's not really concerned with her being competition for him. He's like, this is kind of amusing. And she is like, if I never saw him again, I would be perfectly okay. And, you know, as life happens, they end up on a group project together and find out that, you know, what it's going to take for them to succeed this time is actually working together. And through that process, they learn that they have so much more in common than they realized, that both of them have grown up believing that they had to be excellent at all times. And so it's not just this one-on-one rivalry. It's this rivalry of expectations that they've put on themselves that, like, if I am not the person who wins, I am a failure. And the ways that that has forced beliefs on them, about their own selves, the way that it has informed how they walk around in this world, how they keep their guard up in life. But, you know, you're working on a group project with someone, so you have to learn how to work with them. And in doing so, they slowly but surely start to let some of those guards down. And these rivals that were once, like, so intent on being like this, become people who actually they see themselves as, like, this might be the person who understands me better than almost anybody else in the world. So I like to say it's a juicy rivals to lovers romance, if you like that kind of thing. There's no third act breakup for this one because you're sort of going through this topsy-turvy journey with them anyway. But hopefully it's, you guys have as much fun reading it as I had in writing it. Yeah.
Yeah. So in the beginning, like, you don't need that third act breakup because in the beginning, it's almost like a breakup.
Yeah.
Like, oh my gosh. They're in the coffee shop, right? That's when they first meet.
No, they're in Washington Square Park.
Oh yes, they're in the park. Okay, yeah. Before they went to class. Yes.
Yeah.
And she's there, and she's so, like, confident, and I just see her, like, you know, she's worried about a first day of school, sure, but, like, she's building herself up, and she's having this moment in the park, and he comes in, like, all cocky, and from the beginning, I was like, buddy, why?
Right. Turn it down.
Like, and I see, like, as the story unfolds, you see that, like, that's kind of his almost defense mechanism for this need to be very on top. Like everything is sort of a competition because he needs to be the best in the room. Yeah. And that is, you get there, but I was just like, I mean, back up, buddy. Like, no, she is never gonna respond to this right. The way you want her to. Never gonna work out. And so there's a few of those types of interactions where you're just like, this is not happening. You are ruining this.
Yeah. Like one of those things where it's like, if you would just shut up, you might actually have a chance.
Just ride this out. Just order the vanilla latte and call it a day. Like, it's gonna be fine. Yeah. And just like, I love those interactions, but I was like rooting for her so much and rooting for them to get together, obviously, but just like, someone needs to, like, see this and give him a little advice. Does he not? He needs a wingman. Like, I'm like, where's your wingman? Yeah. He needs to, like, take you home and for a minute and be like, just give her some flowers or something. Yeah. Give it a shot. So you have that sort of that bit where they're like, you want them to be there together, but you maybe they're better off alone, like in the beginning of this book, yeah. Not at the end. And I love that, like, switching it up a bit.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun playing with that. And, you know, I will say it is not an enemies to lovers, right? Like, they are not enemies. They don't hate each other, but there's certainly, like you said, Raina, that piece that's just like, if you don't want to shake him while you're reading, like, the first few chapters, I have not done my job right. Like, you should want to be like, what is your problem? Like, what is the issue? And, you know, in my personal life, I am not someone who's, like, drawn to that kind of, you know, I think about, like, did you ever watch soap operas growing up?
Yes. Yeah. So, my mom watched them constantly. So yeah. Like they were on. So. Yeah.
So I was like a big General Hospital fan, like Young and the Restless, all that kind of stuff. And in those soap operas, you know, you always see like the people who are like, they're getting into a fight, they're getting into an argument. And then all of a sudden they just start making out. And even as a kid, I was always just like, how? Like that doesn't, if I'm angry with you, I'm angry with you. Like I'm not, maybe that's the Taurus, the bull in me, but like I'm not going from being like, I want to smack you to like, oh, I want to smack you. You know, like I'm not going there. But it was fun for me to put myself in that mindset of like, how do I take these characters from this point of like, where, like I said, Keisha starts off with, you know, she's telling her friends, if I never see this guy again, it'll be a great day in my life. to, you know, completely opposite at the end. And so what does it take for them to get there? It's not just like this one time where all of a sudden there's like this aha moment, right? There's these little moments in between that you sort of start to see like the walls fall down for both of them. And, you know, the maybe that was the thing that was an attraction or an intrigue in the beginning becomes something that's more grounded and, you know, actually makes them both start to be like, oh, you know, sort of how you said, right? Like, oh, okay, that's a defense mechanism. That's not like really him. Or even with, you know, him looking at her, right? Like, oh, she's not like this naive utopian like princess, right? Like, no, she's just, you know, there are things that she's had to do in order to show up successfully as a Black woman in life. And so they start to realize, you know, the things that are keeping them apart are not actually real. And so how do you sort of start to peel all of that back? Yeah.
Peel that back. And I picked up on one thing that your character say. I think she says it in the classroom. And she like they have their own things that she doesn't want to get together with him because, you know, of their interactions so far. But she also says like, we're one of like the only two Black people in this like room, and we're not going to do that. Like, we're not going to just get together. Right. Like, and that's what everyone is going to see. And I just like, it's dropping just a little bit of society in where we go, okay, we need to remember the context of everything else that's going on. And I appreciated it because I think, in a lot of ways, especially like in a romance novel, people just don't, we're just in this little bubble that you've created and we don't pay any attention to like how the world works outside of it.
Yeah.
Unless it's relevant, like specifically relevant to that story. And I don't know, I just wanted to mention that I appreciated you dropping in like the world as it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, that just makes it feel more relevant, right? That, I mean, sure, I think that there's the beautiful thing about romance is that you have this large umbrella of the different types of romance that you can appreciate. And so there is, you know, a great thing to read an escapist romance and just have it be the vacuum of those two characters. But that's not the type of romance that I write. Right? The type of romance that I write is, you know, like, they are not in a vacuum. They are people who are always being influenced by the things that are happening around them. And so it would be, for me, it would be inauthentic for these two characters to be going to be in business school at NYU. So you would imagine that it's not a lot of Black people in that room. They are both used to being like number one, top dog. And now they're being pit up against each other. Well, what are some of the things that, yes, you might be thinking personally, like, I don't like this person, but it's also, it's going to be, at least I would think, you'd be influenced by like, yeah, but I may not like him, but I don't want to like diss him. I don't want to show him up. I don't want to, at least that's what Keisha's thinking, right? Like, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to come off as like, oh, this Black woman and this Black man don't like each other, right? It's so she has all of that sort of in her mind, even as she's like, this guy is so arrogant. And I want to like make him know that his way of looking at the world is not the only way of looking at the world. So I don't know. I think to me that makes the characters feel more real.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It absolutely does. And then of course you pull in the friends, which I love because you're the Friendship Chronicles. Everybody, all it does follow this core friend group, and you have, which you've gotten one new character, two new characters into the friend group from the beginning.
Yeah. So, you know, the beautiful thing about it being friends and not like family and not siblings is that you can grow it because friendship groups sort of expand. So maybe, you know, in London Calling, which was the third book, you're introduced to this new work friend who becomes, you know, a part of the friendship circle. And then she gets her own book in book four. Mm-hmm. Keisha was actually introduced in book four, but in a way that if you read book four, and this is not a spoiler, but she's introduced in book four, but she has been around in the background and you just didn't know, right? So she is a high school friend of one of the main characters from the very beginning. And so she's sort of like introduced back into the universe that the reader knows to be true because Reagan, who's the friend from the Shoe Diaries, she's moved to New York, which is where Keisha lives. So it's like, to me, that's just sort of, that's kind of real life again. You know, it's like, well, when I left DC or when I left New Orleans and moved to DC and when I left DC and moved to New York, each of those times I was building on to the friendship group that I already had. I wasn't necessarily replacing friends. So I still have my close friends from back home that, you know, who have now become friends with my college friends who I was with in DC, who have now become friends with my friends in New York. And now it's like this huge expanded circle. Now they may not all be like best friends with each other, but there's spokes that connect them. And they're always willing to come together to kind of, you know, speak the real when it's needed. Mm-hmm. And in this instance, you know, they're certainly there to be like, Keisha girl, you're saying that you don't like this man, but we talk about him a whole lot.
Yeah. Usually when you just like bump into somebody at the park and it's not a great interaction, that's one conversation, you know, that's, and you're done. That's it. But he won't go away.
Yeah. 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 And, you know, I don't know how your friends are, but mine are quick to be like, your words are not actually matching your actions, girlfriend.
Yeah. You got to have a few of those friends, you know, that after like a conversation or two, they'll be like, you've noticed this, right? Have you not noticed this? Because we all notice.
Yeah.
Like, this is real. Yeah. You've got to have those people that'll just speak kindly, but speak the truth to you.
Yeah. You know, over some champagne so you don't feel like you're being attacked, right?
Right.
Not attacked, but like, maybe I can see because I'm not in it. I can see what you can't see, right? And, you know, the thing that I enjoy about, you know, I'm biased because I write it, but The Friendship Chronicles is a first person point of view. So you are like in that particular person's head. But the friends allow you to sort of like get that external viewpoint, right? To be able to say, I know you think this, but here's what we're seeing.
Yeah, sometimes you just need somebody to be like, have you noticed this?
Right.
And then just let it go. Just leave that little seed. I'm going to plant this little seed here. We'll circle back in a week. Yeah. Let's see what you think. Yeah. Like, that's my job.
Here, but just so you know.
We're here for you either way, but yeah, exactly. Exactly. Okay, so Linda has a question. If you did not write romance, what would you write?
Oh, gosh. I mean.
Or do you ever want to write anything that isn't romance?
I mean, I think as long as it's telling women's stories, I'm down for any type of genre. I love romance, obviously. But I mean, I didn't grow up reading romance. So it's not like I have this where it's, you know, I talk to some people sometimes and they're like, I've been reading romance since I was 10. And I was like sneaking books off my mom's shelf. That wasn't me. I didn't really fall in love with romance until my 20s. And that was kind of in a tricked way. People didn't, you know, I was trying to get back into reading for leisure. Cause you know, when you go to college, like you're just reading like all the books that you're supposed to read. And I wanted to get back into reading things for pleasure. And friends of mine started recommending books, but they weren't recommending them like, hey, here's this romance novel that you should read. They're like, here's this book that I think you would really resonate with. Here's this book that has these three-dimensional characters that, you know, you would really love. You would feel like, oh, it's, these are just like your people, your friends, you know. And lo and behold, those were romance novels. And I was like, oh, huh. In my head, I always, when I was younger, I thought of romance for me was like Fabio on the cover.
Yeah.
And again, nothing wrong with Fabio on the cover, but I just, as a young Black girl growing up in New Orleans, did not relate to Fabio on the cover.
No.
It just wasn't, you know, my jam. So that's a long way of saying that basically I started off just having a love for writing women's stories. So it wasn't necessarily that I got into writing being like, I want to write romance, right? I just happened to fall in love with romance. And so I enjoy the opportunity to like bring you through all the twists and turns, even though you know there's going to be a happy ever after at the end, right? Mm-hmm. But if I have an opportunity to write women's stories, regardless of genre, I'm always going to be in a good place and in a happy place for myself.
Okay, so Linda has another question about cities that you write in. So we're gonna pause on that question because we're gonna set it up a little bit. You write in New York, you write DC, you write London. You said, if I remember correctly, you had not been to London. Is that right?
I have been to London a few times. I just never lived there. I visited there. Yeah. Okay. And then there's little pieces in New Orleans just whenever, you know, I have to give like a little nod to home sometimes. Yeah.
What I notice about that is that the cities that you choose and that you've lived in, that as far as I'm aware, are cities that can be their own character. Like, mm-hmm. New Orleans is always, if a story is set in New Orleans instantly becomes a character. Mm-hmm. So it has its own life. New York is like that. I think London is definitely like that. DC is interesting because it has the real DC and then the DC like the yeah. It is, yeah. very the two different DC, yeah. But can become, you know, its own character.
Yeah.
So what has drawn you to the personally, I guess, to those cities? Have you even noticed that you're drawn to like those cities? Is that an outside observation? And then why do you like right there?
Yeah. I mean, personally, I certainly have noticed that. And I think this is absolutely just being that I'm from New Orleans, not to give it too much credit, but I do think that it has something to do with that I'm personally drawn to cities that have distinct stories about them, that have like traditions and cultures. You know, I always say that like I am drawn, and it doesn't have to mean that it's a big city, because I don't think that, I mean, New York is a big city, but like DC is not. New Orleans really isn't, if you're just talking about New Orleans proper. I think there are places like Savannah, Charleston, even like Burlington, Vermont. There are places that across the world that if you drop someone in that city and didn't tell them where they were, they'd know within 2 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. And that those cities are intriguing to me. And I think it's because like I'm from a place that's like that, right? So I'm drawn to that same sort of instinct of like, you know, when I have moved in my own personal life, when I'm considering places to move, like I want to be in a place that I know I'm going into a specific kind of culture. I know I'm like going into, you know, its own traditions and quirks. And, you know, there are things that you grow up in New Orleans doing that like you don't even realize until you visit other places. Like, you know, I think I've said this to you before, Raina, like I grew up playing parade with my siblings and my cousins with all the beads that you got from, you know, what are you going to do with all those beads after you catch them at the parades? Well, you play parade at home. They don't do that in DC.
No, my son did that.
Right.
So. Yeah, he had these bunk beds and he would get up on the top of the bunk bed and throw beads at us. We would walk through his room and he would throw them at us. We walk back through. But yeah, that's not, you can't relate to anyone else anywhere else about that. Yeah.
But you know, the places that you mentioned, they all have their own sort of thing that's like that. So I'm certainly drawn to that in my personal life. And then in terms of with writing, it's a combination of a lot of things. One, it's that I, you know, as you mentioned, I wrote for the Washington Post for a little bit, but I also, even before then, used to be a reporter. And so it's always in my head of like wanting to make sure that I get a thing right. And that I, even if I didn't live there, like with London, I've done enough research that someone who did live there will never be like, we would never do that. like that is a major fear of mine. I don't want someone, you know, we see this, oh God, one of the things that I hate is when I'm watching like a TV show that's set in New Orleans and somehow they manage to go from like from like uptown to Algiers and they never crossed the bridge. And I'm like, how did that happen? What miraculous way did you make this happen?
Oh my gosh. It's a Queen Latifah movie. It's like The Holiday or Holiday.
Oh, The Last Holiday.
The Last Holiday.
Yeah.
And she is at a grocery store. She walks from her house to a grocery store, which is on St. Charles. And then she walks home. And it's a beautiful little place in Algiers because it's got this beautiful view from her front porch of the river and the city. And I was like, wow.
Like she did a long walk.
You can't even maybe. Like that's not even. Yeah, you gotta take an Uber. It's okay.
Yeah.
Like just write it in. We don't need to know. Anyway.
You should at least put her on a ferry or something. I don't know.
Yeah, or mention it. She can walk away from the grocery store and then just say, I just got out of my Uber, whatever it is. But yeah, if you know, you know. And there's some that are just, yeah, absolutely egregious. And I totally agree with that.
Yeah. So I try really hard not to let that happen. But I also, you know, when I'm outlining my books, I think of the five senses for each scene, even if it doesn't show up in the actual book, but I'm thinking about like, what are they seeing? What are they hearing? What are they smelling? If they're eating something, what are they tasting? I'm missing a fifth thing. What are they feeling? And so it helps me to ground that in the city that they're in, right? So if I know that, for example, these two characters, they're going to NYU. Well, sure, Washington Square Park is an iconic park as part of like the city's lore. But it's also, if you go to NYU, it's just like your backyard, right? Yeah. And so it would just be natural for you to be sitting out in the park on an August morning when you have like an hour before class, right? It's a way to, if you've been to New York, if you have lived in New York, you know, if I tell you like they're in Washington Square Park, you can kind of like already get a sense of what like commotion is happening around them. And if you haven't been, then hopefully I've done a good enough job describing it that it kind of gives you the visual. And again, it's all to like, my goal is to remind you at all times that these folks, yes, we are getting them together for a happy ever after, but they are not in a vacuum. So they are informed by, you know, if they're at the park, if you've ever been to Washington Square Park on an August day, there's something happening at every corner of your eye, right? And so for Keisha to be so engulfed in her own like fears and doubts that she's working through and to not have any sort of, you know, like she's completely washed away, like all the things that are happening in front of her, that gives you a sense of like where she is mentally. So it just sort of helps bring the story to life. And from my perspective.
Yeah. So Linda's actual question then.
Okay.
So we had to do the setup. We had to get here. Are there any other cities that you would like to set a book in that you haven't yet?
Oh, yes. Oh, so many. Yes. Some of them are places that I've been and that I love. I'm working on a little spoiler. I'm working on a proposal now to continue the series. And so I want to, at least for one of those books, like have it actually be set in New Orleans instead of just where they're coming back home a couple times. So that would be a first one where it's like the full book in New Orleans. Chicago's on my mind. Detroit's on my mind. I'm a Francophile. I love Paris. I think, you know, Paris, or maybe not even Paris, but like one of the smaller towns in France, that would be really interesting. I mentioned like Charleston, like, you know, like maybe a smaller city or smaller town, but just has like that, again, that like unique culture and stuff to it. I've thought about St. Louis. I could go on.
That's a good list. That's a good list to get started. So I want to talk a minute about, before we wrap up, the swag that you put together for your book, which, no lie, best swag I've ever seen for a book. Ooh. Like, there have been fun things, there have been cute things, ever is best swag. So, and I'm going to show it to you, and we're going to tell everybody how they can get it. You made these little records, and yes, it has a real record inside. Oh my gosh. What is happening? Darby signed it. And it's got a QR code, so you can, it will take you straight to the Spotify playlist that Darby's made for this book. And she has playlists for all of her books. So once you do this and you go there, you've got like access to all of those playlists. I don't know if you just came up with this on your own or someone pitched this to you or where you came up with this, but I'm in love.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I love that you love it. That was like a midnight idea kind of thing. It came from a couple different places. So one, Raina, I think you know this, I've done like a promo box for each book. Yeah. And in that promo box, I'm always sort of thinking about like, what's the theme? Like, what am I going to do differently this time? I'd already done a New York theme for the last book, for her New York Minute. So I didn't want to do another New York theme for this one. So I was like, okay, what can I do differently? What can I do differently? And I was thinking about just putting like a bunch of Easter eggs in this box where it was like, oh, if you like, you maybe you're like, why is there chai tea in this box? Well, you read the book and you find out that like, she like chai is like her favorite drink. And there's a few instances that are important throughout the book where that comes up, you know, that kind of thing. Well, the record is because one of the things that she and Keisha and Julian bond over, A, is music, but also very specifically, he has this really like envious to me record collection. and you come to find out that it's a record collection that was passed down from his dad. And her dad also has this really amazing record collection. And I'm always trying to build my own up. And so I was like, wouldn't it be really cool if I did something that like spoke to the record collection, you know, the bonding that they do over that. And I was like, oh, could I do like something where I did a record?
Is that even possible?
They're like, yeah. And so it is actually possible to get it on the vinyl, but like very expensive. So I was like, okay, well, how can we like tweak this a little bit? And as you said, I do a Spotify playlist for each book. QR codes are an amazing thing these days. So I was like, oh, well, what if we just put the QR code on the vinyl record? And that way it can be like this commemorative, like, you know, physical copy for anyone. Mm-hmm. Who, like me, is trying to build up their vinyl collection. But you can also just, like, you get first dibs on getting to the playlist and, you know, you can listen to it on your phone, on your Siri, on your Alexa, like, you know, anything like that. So
it's pretty good, too. Darby's really good at making playlists. So you want a record? You can get one. I'm going to put in the comments right now, if you pre-order your book from Blue Cypress Books, and the link is just went into the comments, you get the book, you get a signed book plate, and you get one of these lovely
books.
So do that. You have until November 25th. That's when the book comes out. So anyone who pre-orders it, which means before the 25th, will get the record. After after that, you'll get the book and it's amazing. But if you want the record, you have to pre-order. And you have to pre-order it from Blue Cypress. So you can use that link, or you can go to their website and search for Falling for the Competition and order it that way.
Super excited to partner with Blue Cypress for that, because I was like, are you guys going to think that this is just like a wacky idea?
No, it's amazing. Like, we love it.
Yeah.
We, you know, one of the things that we're always trying to do is something different. Like, everyone has done the same old thing. Everyone's seen the same old thing. But if we just want to have fun with it, and this is like, this is so right up our alley, like what we're doing. So, I think we did it. We made it to our time. So I just wanted to thank everybody for watching. I see you out there, and order Darby's book. And yes. And Darby, thank you so much for joining me again.
Thanks for having me, Raina. I always enjoy talking to you, so I really appreciate this opportunity.
Absolutely. thanks, everybody. Have a good
night. Thanks, everyone.